Hi, this is Mrs. English, and today I will be reading to you from Richmond Lattimore's translation of Homer's Iliad. This is the Iliad, and I will be reading from Book 16. Book 16 is the turning point in the story of the Iliad. This book is the culmination of everything big so far, the culmination of Achilles leaving the battle in Book 1. And Achilles refusing the embassy in Book 9, and the wounding of all of the main Greek leaders in Book 11. In this book, in Book 16, Achilles will make a foolish decision, and he'll let Patroclus lead the Myrmidons, who are Achilles' people, in battle. And in this book, Zeus will consider interfering in the battle to save his mortal son, Sarpedon. In this book, Patroclus will kill Sarpedon. We also have the Aristeia of Patroclus. This is his moment of glory. Patroclus' last fight is in this book, and it will not be just one human who gets to kill Patroclus. It will be a combination of Apollo, Euphorbus, and Hector killing Patroclus. Remember, Homer's sympathies will always lie with the Greeks. Patroclus is a Greek. And so even if Hector gets to kill Patroclus, Patroclus will say, "You're just my third killer. Okay? Apollo killed me first." Line 1. So they fought on both sides for the sake of the strong benched vessel. Meanwhile, Patroclus came to the shepherd of the people, Achilles, and stood by him and wept warm tears, like a spring dark running that down the face of a rock impassable drips its dim water. And swift-footed, brilliant Achilles looked on him in pity, and spoke to him aloud and addressed him in winged words. "Why then are you crying like some poor schoolgirl, Patroclus, who runs after her mother and begs to be picked up and carried, and clings to her dress, and holds her back when she tries to hurry, and gazes tearfully into her face until she's picked up? You are like such a one, Patroclus, dropping these soft tears. Could you have some news to tell for me or the Myrmidons? Have you and nobody else received some message from Pythia? Yes, they tell me Actor's son, Menoetius, still lives, and Iacus' son, Peleus, lives still among the Myrmidons. If either of these died, we should take it hard. Or is it the Argives you're mourning over, and how they're dying against the hollow ships by reason of their own arrogance? Oh, are you feeling sorry for the Greeks, who are dying because of their own arrogance? Tell me, do not hide it in your mind, and so we shall both know." Line 20. Then, groaning heavily, Patroclus the rider, you answered, "Son of Peleus, far greatest of the Achaeans, Achilles, do not be angry. Such grief has fallen upon the Achaeans, for all those who were before the bravest in battle are lying up in ships with arrow or spear wounds. The son of Tydeus, strong Diomedes, was hit by an arrow, and Odysseus has a pike wound, and Agamemnon, the spear-famed, and Eurypylos has been wounded in the thigh with an arrow. And over these, the healers, skilled in medicine, are working to cure their wounds. But you, Achilles, who can do anything with you, may no such anger take me as this that you cherish." Line 30. "Hope I'm never as angry as you. Cursed courage! What other man born hereafter shall be advantaged unless you beat aside from the Argives, the Greeks, this shameful destruction? Pitiless, the rider Peleus was never your father, nor Thetis was your mother, but it was the great sea that bore you, and the towering rocks, so sheer the heart in you is turned from us." And so Patroclus says to his friend Achilles in line between 30 and 35, "You weren't born from your mother Thetis and your father the rider Peleus. You were born from rocks and the sea because you're so hard. But if you are drawing back from some prophecy known in your own heart, and by Zeus's will your honored mother has told you of something, then send me out at least. Let the rest of the Myrmidon people follow me, and I may be a light given to the Danaans." Okay, if you can't go out because you know something special from Zeus or from your mother, then at least our people, the Myrmidons, let me go take them out to fight if you can't go. "Give me your armor to wear on my shoulders into the fighting," line 40. "So perhaps the Trojans might think I am you and give way from their attack, and the fighting sons of the Achaeans get wind again after hard work. There is little breathing space in the fighting. We unwearied might with a mere cry pile men wearied back upon their city and away from the ships and the shelters." So what does Patroclus want to do? He wants to wear Achilles' armor and go out to battle, because then, of course, The Greeks might think it was Achilles and have heart renewed, and the Trojans might think it's Achilles and be afraid. So he spoke, supplicating in his great innocence. This was his own death and evil destruction he was entreating. So here we have a bit of foreshadowing. It's not going to be a good thing that Patroclus will go out in Achilles' armor. But now, deeply troubled, swift-footed Achilles answered him, "Ah, Patroclus, illustrious, what is this you are saying? I have not any prophecy in mind that I know of, line 50. There is no word from Zeus, my honored mother has told me, but this thought comes as a bitter sorrow to my heart and my spirit when a man tries to foul one who is his equal, to take back a prize of honor, because he goes in greater authority. This is bitter thought to me. My desire has been dealt with roughly. The girl, the sons of the Achaeans, the Greeks, chose out for my honor, and I won her with my own spear, and stormed a strong-fenced city, is taken back out of my hands by powerful Agamemnon, the son of Atreus, as if I were some dishonored vagabond. Still, we will let all this be a thing of the past, and it was not in my heart to be angry forever, and yet I have said I would not give over my anger until that time came when the fighting with all its clamor came up to my own ships. So, do you draw my glorious armor about your shoulders? Go ahead. Line 65. Lead the Myrmidons, whose delight is battle, into the fighting. If truly the black cloud of the Trojans has taken position strongly about our ships, and the others, the Argives, are bent back against the beach of the sea, holding only a narrow division of land, and the whole city of the Trojans has descended upon them boldly, if it's really like this. Line 70, because they do not see the face of my helmet glaring close, or else they would run and cram full of dead men the watercourses, if powerful Agamemnon treated me kindly. Now the Argives, the Greeks, fight for their very encampment, for the spear rages not now in the hands of the son of Tydeus, Diomedes, to beat destruction aside from the Danaans, nor have I heard the voice of the son of Atreus crying from his hated head. No, but the voice of murderous Hector calling to the Trojans crashes about my ears. With their war cry, they hold the entire plain as they beat the Achaeans, the Greeks, in battle. Line 80. But even so, Patroclus, beat the bane aside from our ships. Fall upon them with all your strength. Let them not, with fires blazing, inflame our ships and take away our desired homecoming. But obey to this end the word I put upon your attention, so that you can win, for me, great glory, great honor and glory in the sight of all the Danaans, so they will bring back to me the lovely girl, and give me shining gifts in addition, when you've driven from their ships. Come back, although later the thunderous lord of Hera might grant you the winning of glory. So Achilles is going to send out Patroclus, but what does he want to do? We see a major theme here in line 82, our desired homecoming. Homecoming is a major theme for the Greeks. They desire to go home. But what is he going to do? Line 84, Patroclus is supposed to win for Achilles great honor and glory, great teammate, mega teammate, and Kleos in the sight of all the Greeks. So they will bring back the lovely girl and give him more gifts. And later, line 88, the thunderous lord of Hera, Zeus, might grant you the winning of glory, Kleos. You must not set your mind on fighting the Trojans, whose delight is in battle without me. So you will diminish my honor, line 90. What is Patroclus not to do? He is not to go out and beat the Trojans. That will be Achilles' job. He's just going to put a little heart in them and save the ships from being burned up. Don't diminish his honor. You must not, in the pride and fury of fighting, go on slaughtering the Trojans and lead the way against Ilion Troy, for fear some one of the everlasting gods on Olympus might crush you. Apollo, who works from afar, loves these people dearly. You must turn back once you bring the light of salvation to the ships, and let the others go on fighting in the flat land. Okay, you just save the ships. Don't go on toward Troy. Father Zeus, Athena, and Apollo, if only not one of all the Trojans could escape destruction, not one of the Argives, but you and I could emerge from the slaughter so that we too alone could break Troy's hallowed coronal. Line 100. So this would be the real desire of Achilles, that just he and Patroclus could take care of Troy. And now as these two were talking thus to each other, meanwhile the volleys were too much for Aias, who could hold no longer his place. The will of Zeus beat him back, and the proud Trojans with their spears, and around his temples the shining helmet clashed horribly under the shower of strokes. He was hit constantly on the strong wrought cheek pieces, and his left shoulder was tiring from always holding up the big glittering shield. Yet they could not beat him out of his place, though they piled their missiles upon him. His breath came ever hard and painful. The sweat ran pouring down his body from every limb. He could find no means to catch his breath, but evil was piled on evil about him. Tell me now. And here Homer takes a little break, and he's invoking the Muses again, talking to them, reminding the audience that the Muses are helping this poet tell the story. Tell me now, you Muses, who have your homes on Olympus, how fire was first thrown upon the ships of the Achaeans. Okay, Homer says, now, Muses, tell us how. And now we hear how in 114. Hector stood up close to Aias, and hacked at the ash spear with his great sword, striking behind the socket of the spearhead, and slashed it clean away, so that Telamonian Aias shook there in his hand a lopped spear. Okay, now he just has a stick. While far away from him, the bronze spearhead fell echoing to the ground, and Aias knew in his blameless heart, and shivered for knowing it, how this was God's work, how Zeus's high thundering cut across the intention in all his battle, how he planned that the Trojans should conquer. He drew away out of the missiles, and the Trojans threw weariless fire on the fast ship, and suddenly the quenchless flame streamed over it. So the fire was at work on the ship's stern. But Achilles struck his hands against both his thighs and called to Patroclus, line 125, "Rise up, illustrious Patroclus, rider of horses. I see how the ravening fire goes roaring over our vessels. They must not get our ships, so we cannot run away in them. Get on your armor, faster. I will muster our people." He spoke, line 130, and Patroclus was helming himself in bronze that glittered. First, he placed along his legs the beautiful greaves, linked with silver fastenings to hold the greaves at the ankles. Afterwards, he girt on about his chest the corselet, starry and elaborate of swift-footed Aeacides. Across his shoulders he slung the sword with the nails of silver, a bronze sword, and above it the great shield, huge and heavy. Over his mighty head he set the well-fashioned helmet with the horse-hair crest, and the plumes nodded terribly above it. He took up two powerful spears that fitted his hand's grip, only he did not take the spear of blameless Aeacides, huge, heavy, thick, which no one else of all the Achaeans could handle, but Achilles alone knew how to wield it, the Pelian ash spear, which Chiron had brought to his father from high on Pelion to be death for fighters. This is the arming of Patroclus. Notice the order that he puts on his armor. And realize this Pelian ash spear, it was a gift at the wedding of Peleus and Thetis. You can compare if you want. Go to Iliad 18, lines 84 and 85, and take a look at that. Patroclus ordered Automedon rapidly to harness the horses, a man he honored most after Achilles, breaker of battles, who stood most staunchly by him against the fury of fighting. For him, Automedon led the fast-running horses under the yoke, Xanthus and Balius. All right, these are Achilles' horses. Xanthus and Balius, who tore with the wind's speed. Horses, stormy Podarge, once conceived of the west wind, and Boar, as she grazed in the meadow beside the swirl of the ocean. So the ancients believed that horses could be impregnated by the wind, and that in that way, that's what made them really fast. In the traces beside these, he put unfaulted Pedasus, whom Achilles brought back once when he stormed Eetion's city. Eetion's city is Thebes. This is the Thebes that was mentioned in Book 9, line 188. When he stormed Eetion's city, he, mortal as he was, ran beside the immortal horses, line 155. But Achilles went meanwhile to the Myrmidons and arrayed them in all their war gear along the shelters. And they, what was it like as the Myrmidons finally got to get dressed for war? And they, as wolves who tear flesh raw, in whose hearts the battle fury is tireless, who have brought down a great horned stag in the mountains, and then feed on him till the jowls of every wolf run blood, and then go, all in a pack, to drink from a spring of dark running water, lapping with their lean tongues along the black edge of the surface, and belching up the clotted blood. In the heart of each one is a spirit untremulous, but their bellies are full and groaning. As such, the lords of the Myrmidons and their men of council around the brave henchmen of swift-footed Iacides swarmed, and among them was standing warlike Achilles, and urged on the fighting men with their shields and the horses. 50 were the fast-running ships wherein Achilles, beloved of Zeus, had led his men to Troy, and in each one were 50 men, line 170, his companions in arms at the rowing benches. He had made 5 leaders among them, and to these entrusted the command, while he in his great power was lord over all of them. One battle was led by Menestheus of the Shining Corslet, son of Spircius, the river swelled from the bright sky, born of the daughter of Peleus, Pelidor the lovely, to unremitting Spircius when a woman lay with an immortal, but born in name to Pirius' son Borus, who married Pelidor formally and gave gifts beyond count to win her. The next battalion was led by the warlike Eudorus, a maiden's child born to one lovely in the dance, Polymele, daughter of Phelus, whom strong Hermes Argiophontes loved when he watched her with his eyes among the girls dancing in the choir for clamorous Artemis of the golden distaff. Presently Hermes the healer went up with her into her chamber and lay secretly with her, and she bore him a son, the shining Eudorus, a surpassing runner and a quick man in battle. You see, these two leaders so far, Menestheus and Eudorus, all have incredible pedigrees. Line 187. But after Eileithyia of the hard pains had brought out the child into the light, and he looked on the sun's shining, Actor's son, Echecles, in the majesty of his great power, led her to his house, when he had given numberless gifts to win her, and the old man Phylas took the child and brought him up kindly and cared for him, in affection as if he had been his own son. The leader of the third battalion was the warlike Pisandrus, Mamelus's son, who outshone all the rest of the Myrmidons in spear-fighting, next to Pelian Achilles' henchman. The fourth battalion was led by Phoenix, the aged horseman, the fifth of Alcimedon, the blameless son of Laerces. But after Achilles gave them their stations, all in good order beside their leaders, he laid his stern injunction upon them. Line 200. Myrmidons! Not one of you can forget those mutterings, those threats that beside the running ships you made at the Trojans in all the time of my anger, and it was I you were blaming as hard son of Peleus. Your mother nursed you on Gaul. Now you have no pity to keep your companions here by the ships unwilling. In other words, poor Achilles' men have been just begging to go to battle and blaming him. We should all go back home again then in our seafaring vessels now that this wretched anger has befallen your spirit. Often you would gather in groups and so mutter against me. So Achilles reminding them of all the things they have said about him since they've been waiting for him to rejoin the battle, saying they may as well go back home. 208. And now is shown a great work of that fighting you longed for. Then let each man take heart of strength to fight with the Trojans. Line 210. So he spoke and stirred the spirit and strength in each man, and their ranks, as they listened to the king, pulled closer together. And what was it like? As a man builds a solid wall with stones set close together for the rampart of a high house, keeping out the force of the winds, so close together were the helms and shields massive in the middle. For shield leaned on shield, helmet on helmet, man against man, and the horsehair crests along the horns of the shining helmets touched as they bent their heads, so dense were they formed on each other. And before them all were two men in their armor, Patroclus and Automedon, both of them in one single fury to fight in front of the Myrmidons, line 220. But meanwhile Achilles went off into his shelter and lifted the lid from a lovely, elaborately wrought chest which Thetis the silver-footed had put in his ship to carry his mother, and filled it fairly with tunics and mantles to hold the wind from a man, and with fleecy blankets, line 225. Inside this lay a wrought goblet, nor did any other man drinking the shining wine from it, nor did Achilles pour from it to any other god, but only Zeus' father. He took this now out of the chest, so it's a very special goblet, and cleaned it with sulfur first, and afterwards washed it out in bright running water, and washed his own hands, and poured shining wine into the goblet, and stood in his middle forecourt and prayed, and poured the wine, looking into the sky, not unseen by Zeus, who delights in the thunder. So this is the prayer of Achilles to Zeus. High Zeus, Lord of Dodona, Pelasgian, living afar off,
brooding over wintry Dodona, your prophets about you living, the Siloi who sleep on the ground with feet unwashed. Hear me, as one time before when I prayed to you, you listened and did me honor and smote strongly the host of the Achaeans. So, one more time, bring to pass the wish that I pray for. For see, I myself am staying where the ships are assembled, but I send out my companion and many Myrmidons with him to fight. Let glory, Kleos, Zeus of the wide brows, go forth with him. So here Achilles prays that glory will go with Patroclus. Make brave the heart inside his breast, so that even Hector will find out whether our henchman knows how to fight his battles by himself, or whether his hands rage invincible only those times when I myself go into the grind of the war god. But when he's beaten back from the ships, their clamorous onset, then let him come back to me in the running ships, unwounded, with all his armor and with the companions who fight close beside him. So he spoke in prayer, and Zeus of the councils heard him. Line 250. The father granted him one prayer and denied him the other. What were the two things that Achilles asked for in prayer? One, he asked that Patroclus could get glory. And what was the second thing? That Patroclus could come back. Line 251. That Patroclus should beat back the fighting assault on the vessels, he allowed. This is Zeus, allowed. But refused to let him come back safe out of the fighting. When Achilles had poured the wine and prayed to Zeus' father, he went back into the shelter, stowed the cup in the chest, and came out to stand in front of the door, with the desire in his heart still to watch the grim encounter of Achaeans and Trojans. It is all that Achilles can do to watch the battle and not join it. Line 257. Now they who were armed in the company of great-hearted Patroclus went onward, until in high confidence they charged on the Trojans. The Myrmidons came streaming out like wasps at the wayside. What was it like when the Myrmidons came streaming out to help fight with the Greeks? Like wasps at the wayside when little boys have got into the habit of making them angry by always teasing them as they live in their house by the roadside? Silly boys. They do something that hurts many people. And if some man who travels on the road happens to pass them and stirs them unintentionally, they, in heart of fury, these are the wasps, come swarming out each one from his place to fight for their children. Line 265. And in heart and fury like these, the Myrmidons, streaming, came out from their ships with a tireless clamor arising. And Patroclus called afar in a great voice to his companions, Myrmidons, companions of Peleus' son Achilles, beam in now, dear friends, remember your furious valor. Line 270. We must bring honor to Peleus' son, far the greatest of the Argives, by the ships. We, even the henchmen who fight beside him, so Atreus' son, wide-ruling Agamemnon, may recognize his madness, that he did no honor to the best of the Achaeans. Line 275. So he spoke, and stirred the spirit and strength in each man. They fell upon the Trojans in a pack, and about them the ships echoed terribly to the roaring Achaeans. But the Trojans, when they saw the powerful son of Menoetius himself and his henchmen, when they saw Patroclus, with him in the glare of their war gear, the heart was stirred in all them. The battalions were shaken in the expectation that by the ships swift-footed Pelion had thrown away his anger and chosen the way of friendship. So what did the Trojans think when they see the armor of Achilles on Peleus on Patroclus? They think Achilles is back. Then each man looked about him for a way to escape the sheer death. Homer insinuates here, he shows his audience here, that as soon as the Trojans, who are winning, they've put a ship on fire, as soon as they think they see Achilles, they are looking around them instantly for a way to escape sheer death. Line 284. Patroclus was the first man to make a cast with the shining spear straight through the middle fighting where most men were stricken, beside the stern on the ship of great-hearted Protesilaus, and struck Pyrachemes. Protesilaus, if you look back at book 2, line 698, you see that he was also the first to die, and struck Pyrachemes, who had led the lords of Paeonian horses from Amydon and the wide waters of Axius. He struck him in the right shoulder, so he dropped in the dust, groaning on his back, and his Paeonian companions about him scattered. And of course, this is very appropriate that Patroclus gets the first kill. He gets the first glory. For Patroclus drove the fear into all of them when he cut down their leader, the best of them all in battle. He drove them from the ships and put out the fire that was blazing, and that ship was left half burnt as it was, as the Trojans scattered in terror and unearthly noise, line 295, and the Danaans streamed back along the hollow ships, and clamor incessant rose up. What was it like? And as when from the towering height of a great mountain, Zeus, who gathers the thunder flash, stirs the cloud dense upon it, and all the high places of the hills are clear, and the shoulders out-jutting, and the deep ravines, as endless bright air spills from the heavens, so when the Danaans had beaten from their ships the ravening fire, they got breath for a little, but there was no check in the fighting, for the Trojans under the attack of the warlike Achaeans had not yet turned their faces to run away from the black ships. Line 305. They stood yet against them, but gave way from the ships under pressure. There man killed man all along the scattered encounter of the leaders, and first among them the strong son of Menoetius threw and struck Areclus in the thigh as he turned back with the sharp point of the spear and drove the bronze clean through. Line 310. The spear smashed in the bone, and he fell to the ground headlong on his face. Meanwhile, warlike Menelaus stabbed Thoas in the chest, where it was left bare by the shield, and unstrung his limbs' strength. Magus, Phyleus's son, watched Amphiclus as he came on, and was too quick with a stab at the base of the leg, where the muscle of a man grows thickest, so that on the spearhead the sinew was torn apart, and the mist of darkness closed over both eyes. One of the sons of Nestor, Antilochus, stabbed Antimenes with the sharp spear, and drove the bronze head clean through his flank, so that he fell forward. But Maris, with the spear from close up, made a lunge at Antilochus in rage for his brother, standing in front of the corpse. But before him godlike Thrasymedes was in with a thrust before he could stab, nor missed his quick stroke into the shoulder, and the spearhead shore off the arm's base, clear away from the muscles, and torn from the bone utterly. Line 325. He fell thunderously, and darkness closed over both eyes. So these two, beaten down under the hands of two brothers, descended to the dark place, Sarpedon's noble companions, and spear-throwing sons of Amisodarus, the one who had nourished the furious Chimera to be an evil to many. And this comes from an unknown legend. I have no idea where that little story comes from. Line 3, 2, 7, and 8. Aias, Oileus's son, in an outrage, caught Cleobulus alive, where he was fouled in the running confusion, and there unstrung his strength, hewing with the hilted sword at the neck, so all the sword was smoking with blood, and over both eyes closed the red death and the strong destiny. Then Peneleus and Lycon ran up close together, since these, with their spear throws, line 335, had gone wide of each other, and each had made a cast vainly. So now the two of them ran together with swords. There Lycon hacked at the horn of the horsehair-crested helm, but the sword blade broke at the socket. Peneleus cut at the neck underneath the ear, and the sword sank clean inside, with only skin left to hold it, and the head slumped aside and the limbs were loosened. Meriones, on his light feet, overtaking Acamas, stabbed him in the right shoulder as he climbed up behind his horses, and the darkness drifted over his eyes as he crashed from the chariot. Idomeneus stabbed Eurymus in the mouth with the pitiless bronze, so that the brazen spearhead smashed its way clean through, below the brain in an upward stroke, and the white bones splintered, and the teeth were shaken out with the stroke, and both eyes filled up with blood. And gaping, he blew a spray of blood through the nostrils and through his mouth, and death in a dark mist closed in about him. Line 350. So these lords of the Danaans, the Greeks, killed each his own man. They, as wolves, make havoc among lambs or young goats in their fury, catching them out of the flocks when the sheep separate in the mountains through the thoughtlessness of the shepherd, and the wolves, seeing them, suddenly snatch them away, and they have no heart for fighting. Line 355. So the Danaans, the Greeks, ravaged the Trojans, and these remembered the bitter sound of terror and forgot their furious valor. But the great Aias, Telamonian Aias, was trying forever to make a spear cast at bronze-helmed Hector. But he, in his experience of fighting, with his broad shoulders huddled under the boar's hide shield, kept watching always the whistle of arrows, the crash of spears thrown, He knew well how the strength of the fighting shifted against him, but even so stood his ground to save his steadfast companions. So who is really the saving grace? It's been Telamoni and Aias. Line 364. What was it like? As when a cloud goes deep into the sky from Olympus through the bright upper air, when Zeus brings on the hurricane, so rose from beside the ships their outcry, the noise of their terror. In no good order they went back, while his fast-running horses carried Hector away in his armor. He abandoned the people of the Trojans who were trapped by the deep-dug ditch unwilling, and in the ditch many fast horses who pulled the chariots left, broken short at the joining of the pole, their master's chariots, while Patroclus was on them, calling hard and loud to the Danans, with evil intention for the Trojans, who, in clamorous terror, choked all the ways where they were cut off. From under their feet stirred the dust storm scattered in clouds. Their single-foot horses were straining to get back to the city, away from the ships and the shelters. That was line 376. But Patroclus, where he saw the stirring of most people, steered there, shouting, and the men went down under the axles headlong from chariots as the empty cars rattled onward. Straightway, straight across the ditch, overleapt those swift and immortal horses the gods had given as shining gifts to Peleus, hurtling onward as Patroclus's rage stirred him against Hector. And so here we realize line 380 and 381 that Peleus's, the son of Peleus, these gifts that had been given to his father, Achilles' horses just leap over the ditch, whom he tried to strike, but his fast horses carried him out of it. As underneath the hurricane, all the black earth is burdened on an autumn day, when Zeus sends down the most violent waters in a deep rage against mortals after they stir him to anger, because in violent assembly they pass decrees that are crooked, and drive righteous from among them and care nothing for what the gods think, and all the rivers of these men swell current to full spate, and in the ravines of their watercourses rip up all the hillsides and dash, whirling in huge noise down to the blue sea, out of the mountains headlong, so that the works of men are diminished? So huge rose the noise from the horses of Troy in their running. All right, we had a huge Homeric simile, lines 384 down to 393. What was it like as the Trojans ran away? It was just like when a huge storm comes, and Homer even gives us the instance of why the storm came, as Zeus was angry at the men. Line 394. But Patroclus, when he had cut away their first battalions, turned back to pin them against the ships, and would not allow them to climb back into their city, though they strained for it, but sweeping through the space between the ships, the high wall, that would be the high wall of Troy, and the river, Scamandrus, made havoc, and exacted from them the blood price for many. There, first of all, he struck with the shining spear Pronous in the chest, where it was left bare by the shield, and unstrung his limbs' strength. He fell thunderously, and Patroclus, in his next outrush at Thestor, Enop's son, who huddled inside his chariot, shrunk back. He had lost all his nerve, and from his hands the reins slipped. Patroclus, coming close up behind him, stabbed with a spear thrust at the right side of the jaw, and drove it on through the teeth, then hooked and dragged him with the spear over the rail, as a fisherman. What was it like as he hooked him? As a fisherman who sits out on the jut of a rock, with line and glittering bronze, hook drags a fish, who is thus drooned out of the water. So he hauled him, mouth open to the bright spear, out of the chariot, and shoved him over on his face, and as he fell, the life left him. That was line 410. The listener must pay attention to where Patroclus is now, and what did Achilles tell him not to do? Achilles said, don't go all the way back to the wall of Troy. And what did he do? Line 396 and 397. He swept through the spaces between the ships and to the high wall and the river Scamandrus. He's chasing them all the way back to Troy. Line 411. Next he struck Euryalus as he swept in with a great stone in the middle of the head, and all the head broke into two pieces inside the heavy helmet, and he in the dust face downward dropped while death breaking the spirit drifted about him. Afterwards, with Eurymus, Amphiterus, and Epaltes, Tlepolemus, Damastor's son, Echius and Pyrrhus, Iphias and Euepus, and Argeus's son Polymelus, all these he fell to the bountiful earth in rapid succession. But Sarpedon, when he saw his free-girt companions going down underneath the hands of Menoetius's son Patroclus, called aloud in entreaty upon the godlike Lycians. These are more Trojans. Shame, you Lycians, where are you running to? You must be fierce now, for I myself will encounter this man, so I may find out who this is, who has so much strength and has done so much evil to the Trojans, since many and brave are those whose knees he has unstrung. He spake, and sprang to the ground in all his arms from the chariot, and on the other side Patroclus, when he saw him, leapt down from his chariot. All right, so the heroes are going to meet one another. Here we have the Trojan, and also son of Zeus, Sarpedon, and he's going to meet up with the Greek Patroclus. They, what was it like as they face each other? As two hook-clawed, beak-bent vultures above a tall rock face, high screaming, go for each other. So now these two, crying aloud, encountered together. Line 430. And watching them, all right, now we're going back up to Ida or Olympus. And watching them, the son of devious divining Cronos, I mean Zeus, was pitiful and spoke to Hera, his wife and his sister. Ah me, that it is destined that the dearest of men, Sarpedon, must go down under the hands of Menoetius' son, Patroclus. The heart in my breast is balanced between two ways as I ponder, whether I should snatch him out of the sorrowful battle and set him down still alive in the rich country of Lycia, or beat him under the hands of the son of Menoetius. I can't decide what I should do. In turn, the lady Hera of the Oxeyes answered him. Line 440. Majesty, son of Cronos, what sort of thing have you spoken? Do you wish to bring back a man who is mortal, one long since doomed by his destiny from ill-sounding death, and release him? Do you want to mess with destiny? Do it then. But not all the rest of us gods shall approve you, and put away in your thoughts this other thing I tell you. Line 445. If you bring Sarpedon back to his home, still living, think how then some other one of the gods might also wish to carry his son out of the strong encounter, since around the great city of Priam are fighting many sons of the immortals. You awaken grim resentment among them. No, but if he's dear to you and your heart mourns for him, then let him be. And let him go down in the strong encounter underneath the hands of Patroclus, the son of Menoetius. But after the soul and the years of his life have left him, then send death to carry him away, and sleep who is painless, until they come with him to the countryside of broad Lycia, where his brothers and countrymen shall give him due burial with tomb and gravestone. Such is the privilege of those who have perished. She spoke, nor did the father of gods and men disobey her. Yet he wept tears of blood that fell to the ground for the sake of his beloved son, whom now Patroclus was presently to kill, by generous Troy and far from the land of his fathers. Now, as these two, so Zeus considered interfering. Now, as these two advancing had come close to each other, there Patroclus threw first at glorious Thrasymelus, who was the strong henchman of Lord Sarpedon, and struck him in the depth of the lower belly and unstrung his limbs' strength. Sarpedon, with the second throw, then missed with the shining spear, but the spear fixed in the right shoulder of Pedasus, the horse, who screamed as he blew his life away and went down in shrill noise into the dust, and the life spirit flittered from him. The other horses shied apart, the yoke creaked, the guide reins were fouled together as the trace horse lay in the dust beside them. That was 471. But at this, spear-famed Automedon saw what he must do, and wrenching out the long-edged sword from beside his big thigh in a flashing stroke, and without faltering, cut loose the trace horse, and the other horses were straightened out and pulled in the guide reins. Line 475. So Automedon cuts loose the dead horse, and the two horses came together in the heart-perishing battle. Once again Sarpedon threw wide with a cast of his shining spear, so that the pointed head overshot the left shoulder of Patroclus, and now Patroclus made the second cast with the brazen spear, and the shaft escaping his hand was not flung vainly, but struck where the beating heart is close in the arch of the muscles. And so here Patroclus strikes Sarpedon in 481. He fell, and what was it like when Sarpedon fell? Remember, he's a demigod. As when an oak goes down, or a white poplar, or like a towering pine tree which in the mountains the carpenters have hewn down with their whetted axes to make a ship timber, so he lay there, felled in front of his horses and chariots, roaring, and clawed with his hands at the bloody dust, or as a blazing and haughty bull in a huddle of shambling cattle, when a lion has come among the herd and destroys him, dies bellowing under the hooked claws of a lion. So now before Patroclus, the lord of the shield-armored Lycians, died raging, and called aloud to his beloved companion. This is Sarpedon calling aloud to his beloved companion Glaucus. Dear Glaucus, you are a fighter among men. Now the need comes hardest upon you to be a spearman and a bold warrior. Now, if you are brave, let bitter warfare be dear to you. First, you must go among all men who are lords of the Lycians everywhere and stir them up to fight for Sarpedon. And then you yourself must also fight with me with the bronze spear. For I shall be a thing of shame and a reproach said of you afterwards all your days forever if the Achaeans strip my armor here where I fell by the ships assembled. But hold strongly on, and stir up all the rest of our people. Those are the dying words of Sarpedon. Don't let them get my armor. Line 502. He spoke, and as he spoke, death's end closed over his nostrils and eyes, and Patroclus, stepping heel, braced to chest, dragged the spear out of his body, and the midriff came away with it, so that he drew out with the spearhead the life of Sarpedon. And the Myrmidons close by held in the hard-breathing horses as they tried to bolt away, once free of their master's chariot. But when he heard the voice, a hard sorrow came upon Glaucus, and the heart was stirred within him, and he could not defend Sarpedon. Line 510. He took his arm in his hand and squeezed it, since the wound hurt him where Teucrus had hit him with an arrow shot as he swept in on the high wall, and fended destruction from his companions. He spoke in prayer to him who strikes from afar, Apollo. Hear me, my lord. You are somewhere in the rich Lycian countryside, or here in Troy, or wherever you are, you can listen to a man in pain, as now this pain has descended upon me. For see, I have this strong wound on me, and my arm on both sides is driven with sharp pains about. My blood is not able to dry and stop running. My shoulder is aching beneath it. I cannot hold my spear up steady. I cannot go forward to fight against the enemy. And the best of men has perished, Sarpedon, son of Zeus, who will not stand by his children. No, but you at least, my lord, make well this strong wound, and put the pains to sleep. Give me strength, so that I may call out to my companions, the Lycians, and stir them to fight on, and I myself do battle over the fallen body. So he spoke, Mrs. Glaucus talking to Apollo. He says, Zeus doesn't pay any attention to us, and Apollo, of course, is a god of healing, and so he looks to him to heal him. Line 527. So he spoke in prayer, and Phoebus Apollo heard him. At once he made the pain stop, and dried away from the hard wound the dark running of blood, so the blood began to clot, and put strength into his spirit. And Glaucus knew in his heart what was done, and was happy that the great god had listened to his prayer. And first of all he roused toward battle all the men who were lords of the Lycians, going everywhere among them to fight for Sarpedon, for the body of Sarpedon. Afterwards he ranged in long strides among the Trojans, by Polydamas the son of Panthous and brilliant Agenor, and went to Aeneas and to Hector of the brazen helmet, and stood near them, and addressed them in winged words. Hector, now have you utterly forgotten your armed companions, who for your sake, far from their friends and the land of their fathers, are wearing their lives away, and you will do nothing to help them? Sarpedon has fallen, the lord of the shield-armored Lycians, who defended Lycia in his strength and the right of his justice. Now brazen Ares has struck him down by the spear of Patroclus. Then, friends, stand beside me. Let the thought be shame in your spirit that they might strip away his arms and dishonor his body. How could they dishonor Sarpedon's body? Line 545, putting him out for the birds or the dogs, something like that. These Myrmidons, in anger for all the Danans perished, in anger of all the Greeks that have been killed by the Trojans, those whom we Lycians have killed with the spear by the swift ships. He spoke, and the Trojans were taken head to heel with a sorrow untakeable, not to be endured since he was their city's stay, always, though he was an outlander, and many people came with him, but he was the best of them all in battle always. They went straight for the Danans, the Greeks raging, and Hector led them in anger for Sarpedon. Meanwhile, the Achaeans roused to the savage heart of Patroclus, the son of Menoetius. First, he spoke to the Iantes, Telamonian Aias and Aias the Lesser, who were burning for battle already. Line 555. Iantes, to both of them, Now your desire must be to defend yourselves, and be such as you were among men before, or even more valiant. The man is fallen, who first scaled the walls of the Achaeans. Sarpedon, if only we could win and dishonor his body, and strip the armor from his shoulders, and kill with pitiless bronze some one of his companions who fight to defend him. So the Greeks, the Trojans are saying, don't let them get Sarpedon's body. Remember how important he was to us. And the Greeks are saying, if only we could get his body so we could dishonor him and get his armor. He spoke, and they likewise grew furious in their defense. And when they on either side had made massive their battalions, Trojans and Lycians and Myrmidons and Achaeans, they clashed together in battle over the perished body. Line 565. Howling terrible with a high crash of the men in their armor, while Zeus west swept ghastly night far over the strong encounter, that over his dear son might be deadly work in the fighting. First, the Trojans shouldered back the glancy-eyed Achaeans when a man, and not the worst of the Myrmidons, was struck down, son of high-hearted Agacles, Epigeus the Brilliant. He was one who was lord before in strong-founded Budean, but now, since he had happened to kill his high-born cousin, had come suppliant to Peleus and to Thetis the silver-footed, and these sent him to follow Achilles, who broke men in battle, to Ilion of the horses in the battle against the Trojans. So how did this man get here that was just struck down? He ended up going and working with Peleus because he accidentally killed his high-born, maybe perhaps royal cousin. So he had to leave the place. He had to go leave there so that he would not be killed. And he went to live with Peleus and Thetis, and they sent him to follow Achilles and to go fight at Troy. Line 577. As he caught at a dead man, glorious Hector hit him with a stone in the head, and all the head broke into two pieces inside the heavy helmet, and he in the dust face downward dropped, while death breaking the spirit drifted about him. And the sorrow took hold of Patroclus for his fallen companion. He seared his way through the ranks of the front fighters like a flying hawk who scatters into flight the daws and the starlings. So straight for the Lycians, O Lord of Horses Patroclus, you swept, and for the Trojans, heart angered for your companion. Every now and then you notice that Homer breaks into the second person narrative, and that's what he does here in 584 and 585. He takes from this third person narrative, saying this happened and that happened, to speaking to Patroclus. So straight for the Lycians, O Lord of Horses Patroclus, you swept, and for the Trojans, heart angered for your companion. Then he shifts back into gear, line 586, into third person. Now he struck Sthenelus, beloved son of Ithiomenes, in the neck with a stone, and broke the tendons loose from about it. The champions of Troy gave back then, and glorious Hector, as far as goes the driving cast of a slender javelin, which a man throws, making trial of his strength, either in a contest or else in battle under the heart-breaking hostilities, so far the Trojans gave way with the Achaeans pushing them. But Glaucus was first, lord of the shield-armored Lycians, to turn again, and killed Bethycles, the great-hearted beloved son of Chalcon, who had dwelled in his home in Hellas, conspicuous for wealth and success among all the Myrmidons. It was he whom Glaucus stabbed in the middle of the chest, turning suddenly back with his spear as he overtook him. He fell thunderously, and the closing sorrow came over the Achaeans as the great man went down. But the Trojans were gladdened greatly, and came and stood in a pack about him. Nor did the Achaeans let go of their fighting strength, but steered their fury straight at them. And there Meriones cut down a chief man of the Trojans, a Laogonus, bold son of Onator, who was Idaean, a Zeus's priest, line 605, and who was honored in his countryside as a god is. Meriones struck him by jaw and ear, and at once the life spirit fled from his limbs, and the hateful darkness closed in about him. But Aeneas threw his bronze spear at Meriones, hoping to hit him as he came forward under his shield's covering. But Meriones, with his eye straight on him, avoided the bronze spear, for he bent forward, and behind his back the long spear shaft was driven into the ground, so that the butt end was shaken on the spear. Then and there Ares the huge took the force from it, so that the vibrant shaft of Aeneas was driven downward, since it had been thrown in a vain cast from his big hand. But Aeneas was angered in his spirit, and called out to him, "Meriones, though you are a dancer, my spear might have stopped you now and for all time, if only I could have hit you." Then in turn, Meriones the spear-famed answered him, "Aeneas, strong fighter though you are, it would be hard for you to quench the strength of every man who might come against you and defend himself, since you also are made as a mortal. But if I could throw and hit you with the sharp bronze in the middle, then strong as you are, and confident in your hand's work, you might give the glory to me, and your soul to Hades of the horses." Line 625. He spoke, but the fighting man, son of Menoetius, reprimanded him. "Meriones, when you are a brave fighter, why say such things? See, dear friend, the Trojans will not give back from the body for hard words spoken. Sooner the ground will cover them. Warfare's finality lies in the work of hands, that of words in council. It is not for us now to pile up talk, but to fight in battle." He spoke and led the way, and the other followed, a mortal like a god. As the tumult goes up from men, what was it like? As the tumult goes up from men who are cutting timber in the mountain valleys, and the sound is heard from far off, such was the dull crashing that rose from earth of the wide ways, from the bronze shields, the skins, and the strong covering oxhides, as the swords and the leaf-headed spears stabbed against them. No longer could a man, even a knowing one, have made out the godlike Sarpedon, since he was piled from head to ends of feet under a mass of weapons. The blood and the dust, while others about him, kept forever swarming over his dead bodies. Body, what was it like? As flies through a sheetfold thunder about the pails over spilling milk in the season of spring when the milk splashes in the buckets, so they swarmed over the dead man, so they swarmed like flies over Sarpedon. Nor did Zeus ever turn the glaring of his eyes from the strong encounter. So Zeus, line 644, he cannot change fate. He could not prevent Sarpedon from dying in battle. All he can do is stare. But kept gazing forever upon them in spirit reflective, and pondered hard over many ways for the death of Patroclus, whether this was now the time, in this strong encounter, when there, over godlike Sarpedon, glorious Hector should kill him with the bronze, and strip the armor away from his shoulders, or whether to increase the steep work of fighting for more men. In the division of his heart, this way seemed best to him, for the strong henchman of Achilles, the son of Peleus, once again to push the Trojans and bronze-helmed Hector back into their city, and tear the life from many. In Hector, first of all, he put a temper that was without strength. He climbed to his chariot and turned to flight, and called to the other Trojans to run, for he saw the way of Zeus's sacred balance. Nor did the powerful Lycians stand now, but were all scattered to flight, when they had seen their king with a spear in his heart, lying under a pile of dead men, since many others had fallen above him, once Zeus had strained fast the powerful conflict. But the Achaeans, the Greeks, took from Sarpedon's shoulders the armor glaring and brazen, and this the warlike son of Menoetius gave to his companions to carry back to the hollow ships. And now Zeus, who gathers the clouds, spoke a word to Apollo. "Go, if you will, beloved Phoebus, and rescue Sarpedon from under the weapons. Wash the dark suffusion of blood from him, then carry him far away and wash him in a running river. Anoint him in ambrosia, put ambrosial clothing upon him. Then give him into the charge of swift messengers to carry him, of Sleep and Death, who are twin brothers, and these two shall lay him down presently within the rich countryside of broad Lycia, where his brothers and countrymen shall give him due burial with tomb and gravestone." Line 675. Such is the privilege of those who have perished. He spoke so, and Apollo, not disregarding his father, went down along the mountains of Ida into the grim fight, and lifting brilliant Sarpedon out from under the weapons, carried him far away, and washed him in a running river, and anointed him in ambrosia, put ambrosial clothing upon him, then gave him into the charge of swift messengers to carry him, of Sleep and Death, who are twin brothers, and these two presently laid him down within the rich countryside of broad Lycia. But Patroclus, with a shout to Automedon and his horses, went after Trojans and Lycians in a huge blind fury. Besotted, had he only kept the command of Peleides Achilles, he might have got clear away from the evil spirit of Black Death. Here Homer gives us a foreshadowing of the death of Patroclus. If only, line 686, if only he had kept the command of Peleides Achilles, who told him not to try to go to the walls and not to win too much glory. But always the mind of Zeus is a stronger thing than a man's mind. He terrifies even the warlike man. He takes away victory lightly when he himself has driven a man into battle, as now he drove on the fury in the heart of Patroclus. Then, and here Homer shifts from third person to second person, and it's quite effective. Then, who was it you slaughtered first? And he's talking to to Patroclus. Then who was it you slaughtered first? Who was the last one, Patroclus, as the gods called you to your death? Addressed us first, and after him Autunous, and Echelos, Perimus, son of Magus, and Epistor, and Melanippus, and after these Elasus, and Mulius, and Pilartes. These he killed while each man of the rest was bent on escaping. There the sons of the Achaeans might have taken gate-towering Ilion under the hands of Patroclus. Okay, the Greeks might have won. Who raged with the spear far between them, had not Phoebus Apollo taken his stand on the strong-built tower, with thoughts of death for him, but help for the Trojans. Three times Patroclus tried to mount the angle of the towering wall, and three times Phoebus Apollo battered him backward with the immortal hands, beating back the bright shield. As Patroclus, for the fourth time, like something more than a man, came at him, he called aloud, and spoke winged words in the voice of danger. "Give way, illustrious Patroclus! It is not destined that the city of the proud Trojans shall fall before your spear, nor even at the hand of Achilles, who is far better than you are." He spoke, and Patroclus gave ground before him a great way, avoiding the anger of him who strikes from afar. Line 711. So who is the one who just spoke to Patroclus? Three times he tried to mount the tower, three times Apollo battered him backward, and as of Patroclus for the fourth time came at him, Apollo spoke aloud, and that was Apollo speaking, "Give way, illustrious Patroclus." Note that for the Greeks it takes a god to make Patroclus stop and give way. He spoke, this is line 710, and Patroclus gave ground before him a great way, avoiding the anger of him who strikes from afar, Apollo. But Hector, inside the Scaean gates, the Trojan gates, held his single-footed horses, and wondered whether to drive back into the carnage and fight there, right, because he's behind the walls of Troy, or call aloud to his people to rally inside the wall. So Hector is pondering, should I leave the walls again and go out into the carnage and battle, or should I rally the people, come here, the day's done, come back inside the gates? Thus, as he was pondering, Phoebus Apollo came and stood by him, assuming the likeness of a man, a young and a tall, strong one, Asius, who was uncle to Hector, breaker of horses, since he was brother of Hecabe and the son of Demas, and had made his home in Phrygia by the stream of Sangarius. In the likeness of this man, Zeus's son Apollo spoke to him. Line 720. "Hector, why have you stopped fighting? You should not do it. If I were as much stronger than you as I is now, I am weaker, okay, if only. So might you in this evil way hold back from the fighting. But come, hold straight against Patroclus, your strong-footed horses. You might be able to kill him. Apollo might give you such glory." 725. He spoke, and went once more, a divinity, into the mortal struggle, while glorious Hector called to wise Cebriones to lash their horses into the fighting. Meanwhile, Apollo went down into the battle and launched a deadly confusion upon the Argives, the Greeks, and gave glory to the Trojans and Hector. Now Hector let the rest of the Danaans be, and he would not kill them, but drove his strong-footed horses straight for Patroclus. On the other side, Patroclus sprang to the ground from his chariot, holding his spear in his left hand. In the other, he caught up a stone, line 735, jagged and shining in the hold of his hand, and threw it. Leaning into the throw, nor fell short of the man he aimed at, nor threw vainly, but hit the charioteer of Hector, Cebriones, the illegitimate son of glorious Priam. So Hector has Cebriones, his half-brother, for his chariot driver, and he was just killed. As he held the reins of his horses, the sharp stone hit him in the forehead and smashed both brows in on each other, nor could the bone hold the rock. But his eyes fell out into the dust before him there at his feet, so that he vaulted to earth like a diver from the carefully wrought chariot, and the life left his bones. Now you spoke in bitter mockery over him, rider Patroclus. And now Patroclus is vaunting, line 745. And what was the description, how this man, his Hector's half-brother, hit the ground just like a diver, somebody who's diving? See now what a light man this is, how agile an acrobat. If only he were somewhere on the sea where the fish swarm, he could fill the hunger of many men by diving for oysters. He could go overboard from a boat, even in rough weather, the way he somersaults so light to the ground from his chariot now. So, to be sure, in Troy also they have their acrobats. He spoke so, and strode against the hero Cebriones with the spring of a lion. All right, how does Hector go to get the man he just killed? As a lion, with the spring of a lion, who, as he ravages the pastures, has been hit in the chest, and his own courage destroys him. So in your fury you pounced, Patroclus, above Cebriones. This is second person again, Homer speaking second person. On the other side, Hector sprang to the ground from his chariot, and the two fought it out over Cebriones. And of course this is the corpse of Cebriones. Like lions who in the high places of a mountain, both in huge courage and both hungry, fight together over a killed deer. So above Cebriones, these two, urgent for battle, Patroclus, son of Menoetius, and glorious Hector, were straining with the pitiless bronze to tear at each other, since Hector had caught him by the head and would not let go of him, and Patroclus had his foot on the other side, while the other Trojans and Danans drove together the strength of their onset. Line 765. Trojans and Danans drove together the strength of their onset, as east wind and south fight it out with each other in the valleys of the mountains to shake the deep forest timber, oak tree and ash and the cornel with the delicate bark. These whip their wide-reaching branches against one another in inhuman noise, and the crash goes up from the splintering timber. So Trojans and Achaeans, springing against one another, cut men down, nor did either side think of disastrous panic, and many sharp spears were driven home about Cebriones, and many feathered arrows sprung from the bowstrings, many great throwing stones pounded against the shields as they fought on hard over his body, and he, in the turning dust, lay mightily in his might, his horsemanship all forgotten. So long as the sun was climbing still to the middle heaven, so long as it was approaching noon, so long the throw weapons of both took hold, and men dropped under them. But when the sun had gone to the time for unyoking of cattle, when the workday's done, then beyond their very destiny the Achaeans were stronger, and dragged the hero Cebriones from under the weapons and the clamor of the Trojans, and stripped the armor from his shoulders, and Patroclus charged with evil intention in on the Trojans. Three times he charged in with the force of the running war god, screaming a terrible cry, and three times he cut down nine men. But as for the fourth time he swept in, like something greater than human, there Patroclus, and here we have second person again, he's speaking to Patroclus, the end of your life was shown forth, since Phoebus, Apollo, came against you there in the strong encounter dangerously, nor did Patroclus see him as he moved through the battle, and shrouded in a deep mist came in against him and stood behind him and struck his back and his broad shoulders with a flat stroke of the hand, so that his eyes spun. Who just hit Patroclus? Apollo. Unseen, Apollo went through the battle, and Apollo knocks off Patroclus's helmet, which belongs to, of course, Achilles. Phoebus Apollo now struck away from his head the helmet, four-horned and hollow-eyed, and under the feet of the horses it rolled, clattering, and the plumes above it were defiled by blood and dust. Before this time, it had not been permitted to defile in the dust this great helmet crested in horsehair. Achilles never let it roll in the dust. Rather, it guarded the head and the gracious brow of a godlike man, Achilles. But now Zeus gave it over to Hector to wear on his head. Hector, whose own death was close to him, line 800. And in his hands was splintered all the huge, great, heavy, iron-shod, far-shadowing spear, and away from his shoulders dropped to the ground the shield with its shield sling and its tassels. The Lord Apollo, son of Zeus, broke the corslet upon him. Disaster caught his wits, and his shining body went nerveless. So who caused him to lose his shield? Patroclus? Apollo broke the cords that hold it together, and so he loses the shield and realizes the gods are against him, line 805, and his shining body went nerveless, because now he's defenseless. No helmet, no shield. He stood stupidly, and from close behind his back, a Dardanian man hit him between the shoulders with a sharp javelin. Euphorbus, son of Panthous, who surpassed all men of his own age with the throwing spear, and in horsemanship and the speed of his feet. He had already brought down 20 men from their horses since first coming, with his chariot and his learning in warfare. And then we switch to second person again. He first hit you with a throw spear, O rider Patroclus, nor broke you, but ran away again, snatching out the ash spear from your body, and lost himself in the crowd, not enduring to face Patroclus, naked as he was, in close combat. All right. So, the Trojan who hits Patroclus with a spear between the shoulders pulls it out, and even Patroclus has naked of armor. He has no armor to protect him. This Trojan man still runs away. He's still afraid. Line 816. Now Patroclus, broken by the spear and the god's blow, tried to shun death and shrink back into the swarm of his own companions. But Hector, when he saw high-hearted Patroclus trying to get away, saw how he was wounded with the sharp javelin, came close against him across the ranks, and with the spear stabbed him in the depth of the belly and drove the bronze clean through. He fell thunderously, to the horror of all the Achaean people. So Hector just killed or dealt a fatal blow to Patroclus. What was it like? As a lion overpowers a weariless boar in wild combat, as the two fight in their pride on the high places of a mountain, over a little spring of water, both wanting to drink there, and the lion beats him down by force as he fights for his breath, so Hector, Priam's son, with a close spear stroke, stripped the life from the fighting son of Menoetius, that's Patroclus, who had killed so many, and stood above him and spoke aloud the winged words of triumph. And now Hector is going to vaunt over Patroclus as Patroclus is dying. Line 830. Patroclus, you thought perhaps of devastating our city, of stripping from the Trojan women the day of their liberty and dragging them off in ships to the beloved land of your fathers. Fool! When in front of them the running horses of Hector strained with their swift feet into the fighting, and I with my own spear am conspicuous among the fighting Trojans, I who beat from them the day of necessity. For you, here the vultures shall eat you. Wretch, Achilles, great as he was, could do nothing to help you. When he stayed behind and you went, he must have said much to you. Patroclus, lord of horses, see that you do not come back to me in the hollow ships, until you've torn in blood the tunic of man-slaughtering Hector about his chest. So Hector here makes fun of Patroclus. What Achilles must have said to him when he left. In some such manner he spoke to you and persuaded the fool's heart in you. And now, dying, you answered him, O rider Patroclus. And so Homer is giving us the words of now Patroclus, the dying Patroclus, to Hector. And so he speaks to Hector. And now, dying, you answered him, O rider Patroclus. He speaks for Patroclus. Now is your time for big words, Hector. Yours is the victory given by Cronus' son Zeus and Apollo, who have subdued me easily, since they themselves stripped the arms from my shoulders. Even though 20 such as you had come in against me, they would all have been broken beneath my spear and have perished. No, deadly destiny with the son of Leto has killed me. And the son of Leto, of course, is Apollo. And of men, it was Euphorbus. You are only my third slayer. And put away in your heart this other thing that I tell you. You yourself are not one who shall live long, but now already death and powerful destiny are standing beside you, to go down under the hands of Aeacus's great son, Achilles. He spoke, and as he spoke, the end of death closed in upon him, line 855, and the soul fluttering free of his limbs went down into death's house, mourning her destiny, her Moira, leaving youth and manhood behind her. You can compare this with book 22, line 363. Now, though he was a dead man, glorious Hector spoke to him. Patroclus, what is this prophecy of my headlong destruction? Who knows if even Achilles, son of lovely-haired Thetis, might before this be struck by my spear and his own life perish? He spoke, and setting his heel upon Patroclus, Hector wrenched out the bronze spear from the wound, then spurned him away on his back from the spear. Thereafter, armed with the spear, he went on, aiming a cast at Automedon, the godlike henchman for the swift-footed son of Aeacus. With the spear, as he was carried away by those swift immortal horses, the gods had given his shining gifts to Peleus. Thus Book 16 ends with Hector now chasing the chariot and the horses of Achilles.